The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
I have the joy of continuing my conversation with Meg Meeker. Her new book is called Raising a Strong Daughter in a Toxic Culture. She's a pediatrician and parenting expert, and she's written many books, and she can be found at meekerparenting.com. Meg, welcome back.
Thank you, Eric, for having me.
I wanted to talk to you the end of our last conversation. We began to talk a little bit about the transgender issue that, to my mind, is sheer lunacy. I've never seen anything like it in my life, what is going on out there. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, your perspective.
Sure. Well, you know, honestly, 99% of what we're seeing out there in the transgender culture is a fad. Now, that makes some people absolutely crazy, but parents know it's a fad. Why? 10 years ago, how many conversations did you have with anybody about transgender? You didn't. We fought hard for sexual freedom because of the sexual revolution. We identified people as, you know, bisexual, trisexual, homosexual, whatever. But then when we got past that, we thought, where do we go from here, our culture? And so then we went at gender. Now, this is really important for parents to know, that a true transgender child is extremely rare. I have 8 medical partners. And after this all came out, I said, okay, how many of you guys have seen a true transgender? And out of 8, there was maybe one who said, I did. A true transgender child is one who's 5, 6, 7 says, Mom, I'm living in the wrong body. Something's terribly wrong, terribly wrong. And that kid has real deep psychic conflict. That's not what we're seeing today. What we're seeing is 5, 10, 15-year-olds who come to their parents and go, you know what? I really want to be a boy. I think I identify more as a boy, but I'm a girl. So I really want to do this, Mom. I really feel strongly. I want to flip over the other sex. And parents have been brainwashed to go, okay, well, then I'll take you to the doctor and we'll figure this out. Now, think about this. A 15-year-old doesn't even know what they want for supper. And we're taking them to a doctor. There are 40 medical clinics in the country who are doing transgender transitioning. I think it's malpractice. I'll tell you why. Because when you take a child and you pump them full of hormones and you do surgeries on them, with boys, you're castrating young boys. You're castrating young boys.
No, there's no question this is malpractice. In a way, it's worse than malpractice. This is grotesque.
And with girls, you're rendering them infertile. And let me tell you what's going to happen. These kids are going to grow into their 25 in their 30s, and they're going to look back at their parents and go, what were you thinking? Now I can't have children. Here's the other thing that's really why I call it medical malpractice. We in medicine pride ourselves in implementing treatments to illnesses or issues that have a reproducibly positive effect. If you're going to treat a pneumonia, you don't pick, you know, just 1 out of 10 antibiotics randomly and go, I hope this helps. With transgender transitioning, we have no clear medical evidence that transitioning a child leads to a good outcome. That's a first in medical history.
Now, you know, but it's like going back to bloodletting and leeches and the four bodily humors. It's absolute madness. We're living in a culture where madness has the upper hand, even in the professions.
Yeah. Think about what the FDA does with drugs. They run them through test after test after test after test. They want to make sure it's going to have a reproducible positive outcome. But with transgender, in fact, we have very strong evidence that it does just the other, that these kids who transition get to their 20s and they're 7 times more likely to commit suicide. We know that about 80% of the kids who don't transition, they hit their mid-20s and they end up identifying with their gender of origin. Now, if people want to become transition their gender, fine. But don't do it before your kids have full brain function, full abstract thinking, the capacity to think abstractly. Wait till they're grown-ups. But don't mess with our kids because we're really making them feel crazy. The other thing that bothers me is the only way you can diagnose transgender and treat it is by the feelings the child gives you.
In other words, it could not be more subjective. It's the definition of subjective.
You know, schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, there are other measurements other than a person's feelings that we physicians can make a diagnosis. But with transgender, the only thing we can go on is a child's feeling. So I think the root of this really is we're trying to make our culture genderless. We don't like maleness. We don't like femaleness. And so we're trying to eliminate it. But the irony is we're telling a boy that being a girl is a good thing and a girl is a boy. So it's so confusing. It doesn't even make any sense. But the reason I'm so outraged about this, and I wish doctors would talk about it, is that we are rendering our children infertile, castrating young boys. It's not okay. It's morally reprehensible. It's malpractice medically. Psychologically, it's just going to ruin these kids. And I wash my hands of it. I really do. And if kids come in my practice and say they want this, I say, I can't take care of you because I cannot sanction this.
Well, I mean, kids want a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
You know, some kids want to eat cotton candy, you know, for dinner every night. Who cares what they want? It's the parents' job to know what is right and wrong and good for the kid. And it's the parents' job to take the grief when the kid cries and wails and says, I want it, I want it, I want it, I want it. Okay, so that doesn't mean you have to give it. And so what I find extraordinary here is the dramatic cowardice of professionals, of politicians to take a stand on these things, and of medical professionals to stand against the dreaded LGBTQ lobby. It's their job to do that. And what you're talking about, the transgender fad, is the definition of anti-science. It's the definition of anti-science.
Yes.
But even here, when something is by definition anti-science, people do not seem to have the bravery, whatever it takes, the professionalism that you do, to say, at the very least, we cannot proceed with this based on the evidence we now have.
Oh, I mean, it's overwhelming. But see, you've got a convergence of a lot of things going on here. Our kids are being used as a social experiment for the purpose of trying to get rid of any type of gender. They want gender fluidity, sexual fluidity, everything. And they're being used as a social experiment. But then we also have a culture that says, don't you dare hurt anybody's feelings, right?
Right.
The safe zone, that a person has a safe zone. So if you come out and you talk about something strongly about something as reprehensible as transgender, A, you're going to hurt people's feelings, they say, and B, it takes a lot of courage. And I tell parents, look, you know, the whole thing started with the bathrooms. We don't want to hurt these kids' feelings, and, you know, sort of they're going to be bullied if they, you know, if they feel embarrassed going to the bathroom. If you want to set your kid up for being bullied, have a boy march into a girl's bathroom because the door will close and there are going to be 5 girls in there and one of them is going to make fun of you. Now, that's mean to a kid. That's putting a child at risk for being bullied. And then, of course, now we've got this whole athletic thing. You know, we've got guys transitioning to women and they're beating everybody sprinting. What do we do with that? You know, it's going to come around to bite us so hard. But the thing that irks me is we're using our kids to experiment. If adults want to experiment, have at it.
Isn't that the point? If you want to do something stupid or harmful to yourself as an adult, it's a free country. But when we're talking about children, that ought never to be possible.
Yeah. And this whole idea that those in Hollywood are saying we're going to raise our child to choose their gender.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how that makes kids crazy, because a boy and a girl are different from birth. We know that, you know, visually they're just very, very different hormonally. But when you have a 5-year-old who's identifying as a male, who's building things and smashing things, he's running around the house, jumping over couches. And then you say, wait a minute, but you could be a girl, you know, don't leave that out. That kid, because you're the grown up, believes that you are smarter. And even though he feels like a boy,
yeah,
he should be feeling like a girl too. So something's wrong.
Oh my gosh.
That's how you make kids feel crazy.
It's the same thing with the same sex attraction. People say like, well, if you have a flicker of same sex attraction, just a tiny bit, you're probably gay. Wait a minute. Where did that come from? It's very confusing. The confusion for me at heart, because a lot of people think, what happened? Like, where did this suddenly come from that I need to jump in with this? Like, where? And I think part of it, if I have to, you know, address it philosophically or theologically, it seems like a war on what I'm speaking as a person of faith, on God's reality, right? Like, there's nothing clearer in the scripture than God made us in his image, male and female. It's really clear. The complementarity of the sexes is clear. And there's a bigger picture. Usually Catholic theologians get this better than like evangelicals. But the idea that that men and women are made for each other by God complementarily, and that when they come together in marriage, it's a picture of all of our union with God. In other words, it's a transcendent, poetic idea that goes way beyond biology, but we've kind of thrown that away. And if you throw that away, then it's kind of like whatever I can get away with. And so we're seeing all this bizarre stuff. And it seems to me on some level, whether it's something that is explicitly done or unwittingly done, that it's a war on reality, because there's nothing in reality that says gender could be fluid. I mean, I've always said when I see a rooster lay an egg, I will be willing to have a serious conversation on this. Otherwise, I cannot understand where this suddenly came from.
Yeah, absolutely. I can almost, you know, because I thought long and hard about this. You think about the revolutions that have taken place since the 60s. You know, we had feminism saying, I want to do whatever men can do. And as a matter of fact, I want to do it better than they want to do. And then we had the sexual revolution saying, you know, all sex should be free. We can do whatever we want. And then what happened is women kept upping the ante, and we have morphed into a culture that is anti-male. If you are a dad, Lord help you, because look at how you're portrayed in the media. You're stupid, you're a dunce, you don't have anything to say. It's all about mom. So we also have an enormous division between men and women in our country. And there are a lot of women, we've seen this explode with the Me Too movement. Started because, you know, women said, look, we don't want to deal with abuse, great. But then it morphs into this I hate men movement. So you've got this pitting of men and women against one another. And people are saying, well, how do we reconcile this? What do we do? And so what we do is sort of fill in the gaps with, it doesn't really matter what you are. So we're profoundly confused. And then you couple that with, you know, throwing God out, throwing a moral plumb line between this is good, this is bad, and you have social chaos. And our kids are feeling it more than anybody. So, you know, we want to be able to define whatever we want, even down to a genetic level. We want the freedom to do that, but it's not working. And so this is where I think we've normalized crazy.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes we can look to literature for guidance on this. I think it was last summer I read H.G. Wells' famous short novel, The Island of Dr. Moreau, where this doctor has this idea that he can transform these animals surgically into humans, right? And of course, you can't, right? You just can't go from here to there. You can try, but it will be disastrous and chaotic. And that's effectively what we're trying to do. God has created an order, and we can move within that order. You know, I could get my ears pierced, or I can get, you know, a tattoo, or I can have a surgical operation, you know, to look different. But I can't transform myself into something other than I am. And that's the kind of lie that people are putting forward today, that you can become fundamentally different. And as you're saying, if we have any information on this, any evidence, any statistics, the evidence is that this has drastically negative effects. And people don't seem to be willing to deal with that because the popular narrative in the culture sort of can't handle the truth.
Right. Absolutely. You know, if you think about it, if the FDA were in charge of treatments of transgender kids, there's no way you'd be doing this because they run it through so many things. And I think that ultimately we're living in a culture which prizes autonomy, you know, lack of dependence on anything. And so women and men do not want to be, maybe men are better than, do not want to be dependent upon one another. They don't want to need the other. But the reality is men and women do need each other if we're going to have our society move into the future for reproduction. So you can never get away from that. And you're absolutely right. We are also playing God here. You know, if God doesn't matter, we have the power to do whatever we want, and it's a delusion. You know, we can recreate man, we can recreate woman. You are not a holy person, you're just flesh, you just think, and you have strong feelings. So it really doesn't matter. I can change you into whatever I want. So, you know, we've replaced God in that we really believe science can do this.
Right. And again, you're saying that on the one hand, we say science can accomplish it, but the evidence we use in science says that this isn't smart, this isn't working. To me, you know, when I look at somebody like Bruce Jenner, right, and my friend John Zmirek says, freedom in America is to be able to say the two words, Bruce Jenner. You know, if I were to be polite, if I were in the room with Bruce Jenner and he clearly would want to be called Caitlin, I would call him Caitlin. But the idea that I'm supposed to think that somehow he's now a woman because he dresses as a woman, it just strikes me as crazy. And I think the main reason it strikes me as crazy is that this whole idea is historically unprecedented. This is an epochal shift. And when we're going to make an epochal shift, we ought to know that it's a right shift. Nobody seems to have any information to indicate that there's anything to this, but people say, but you can't talk about that. Shut up. Just go along with it. It's madness.
It is madness. And, you know, my job is to speak for kids and to say the things they can't say, because a 12-year-old child who says, a girl who says, I identify more with a boy, really can't cognitively or psychologically navigate her feelings and say, this is what those feelings should do for me or how they should change me. So it's really adults who are coming along and saying, well, if you have those feelings, here's who you are. You know, I know you read, you're a biblical scholar. I love scripture too. Read the Old Testament, the New Testament. I can't find one example in there of transgender. You know, I can't, and I've looked. So this really is a very new phenomenon, and I really do believe it's here because we have said we men and women are in charge of our destiny. We're in charge of our birth. We're in charge of fertility. We're in charge of everything, and that even includes genetics. And when we do that and we start fiddling with that in kids, chaos comes. And I really do believe, Eric, you know, in 20 years, you're going to see a lot of lawsuits. Parents are going to be suing their kids.
I mean, you mean kids are going to be suing their parents? Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, look, if your 12-year-old or 11-year-old daughter comes to you and says, I feel like a boy, I'm like a tomboy, you'd be like, well, hey, that's great. There's a word called for that. It's called tomboy. And you know what? That's what they call girls who like to do climb trees and stuff like that. But you're a girl. God made you as a girl. That's obvious. I love you as you are. But that's not something you can change. God made it. And if God made it, he wants to bless it. And so this idea that parents are unable to say that and are being guided by the surrounding culture. I mean, I guess the reason that I laugh at this is I think that that's what happened in Nazi Germany. It was like everybody was saying X, Y, and Z. So I'm just going to say X, Y, and Z, too. No matter that it's wrong, no matter that it leads to satanic evil, I'm just going to go along with the crowd. It happens over and over in culture. But when it happens to us, we say, well, it could never happen to us. It's happening to us right now with this movement, with parents going along with the crowd.
Right. And like I say, we're using our kids as a social experimentation, and that's not okay. And it really is a form of social engineering. But the thing that really bothers me is we've got the minority bullying the majority, because I can't tell you how many parents I hear from who write or whatever and say, help me. I don't know what to do. I don't want my third grader to hurt the feelings of the boy in her class, Jimmy, who wants to be called Jenny. And I also don't want my daughter to get in trouble with a teacher. And I don't want my daughter to look like she hates people. So what do I say? See, we're so afraid of standing up and saying, you know, of course you don't want your third grader to walk in and go, you know what, Jimmy, you're Jimmy. I'm going to call you Jimmy. You're wrong. My mom says there's no way you can be Jenny. Of course you don't do that. But we've got to be able to help our kids in a school system, right, in a public school system, and they are now, who are encouraging this, who are training teachers to say, look, everybody knows Jimmy wants to be Jenny, so call him Jenny, and it's okay. But if that little kid looks at Jimmy and goes, I don't see a Jenny, well, I'm not seeing things right. So the minority are the people who want to push it. It's the majority who don't. So for the sake of our kids, we've got to give some pushback.
Absolutely.
Without being haters. I mean, I don't hate transgender kids. I don't hate the parents that are doing it. I understand they're horribly misguided.
Yeah, they're misguided. And I think it gets to an issue I was talking earlier about understanding what's rude behavior. We also have to understand what's polite behavior. It's polite. If I were in the room with Bruce Jenner, in my heart, I care about this human being. God loves this human being. So it's not about being rude or whatever. And if somebody demands something, we can go along with that. Even if we think it's wrong, you know, we can say, use the name that they want. But that doesn't mean in our minds we have to shift what we know to be true. And we have to explain to our kids, look, just go along with it. But you don't have to, you don't have to play with this person. You don't have to seek this person out. But we in our family, we don't buy into this stuff. You know, it's okay to be different. We've just got seconds left. Meg, what can we say finally on this dramatically important subject?
Yeah. What I tell all parents is, you know, every parent is wired with everything they need by God to be a great parent. The problem is parents aren't listening to their gut. Parents aren't acting. They know they don't like this. And so they stay silent. They know they don't want their kids to have a cell phone at 8, but they stay silent. They know they don't want their kids on social media, but they cave to even regulate a little bit because they don't want their child to feel awkward. We can't parent strong kids this way. We can navigate any issue in our culture if we become allies with our kids and say, my job is to raise a child of strong character, not a good performer, and that's what I'm going to do.
And we're going to have to end it there. But folks, go to MeekerParenting.com, MeekerParenting.com. Meg, a joy to have you. When you get to New York, let us know.
I sure will. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.